who we are, our worst impulses, what happens when we just sort of have this religious adherence to free markets, when experts say we really should have had a very visible hand on this and directed supplies and figured out who needed things and made sure that our money was being used wisely.
Well, J. David McSwain, I want to thank you for being with us. Investigative reporter with ProPublica, new book out today, Pandemic Inc., Chasing the Capitalists and Thieves Who Got Rich While We Got Sick. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And thank you very much, Amy. It's just about 8 o'clock. No, it's just about 6 o'clock. Yeah, I'm early. And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM. It's time now for the weekly talk and adventure show, Off the Wall. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. We're joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, yes, Emmanuel, do you hear me?
You having some trouble over there?
No, I'm here.
Okay.
Do you hear me?
Whoa.
You see me?
I'm pressing the wrong buttons.
Don't do that.
I'm sorry.
Stop.
Won't do that again.
Okay. Oh, and our theme is here. Oh, this
theme's
is
a bit loud, isn't it?
Let's turn that theme down. I think we're running a little hot.
A little hot. Coming in hot here. Happy Tuesday to you. It's not quite the middle of the week yet, but it's getting there. It's getting there.
And Tuesday to you as well.
A happy Tuesday. Yeah, that's what we have here. So, quite a day in New York City, huh? Wow. A subway shooting and a smoke bomb. I don't know how you even describe this. Some joker in Brooklyn decided to drop a canister that had all the smoke come out of it in a moving subway car and then started shooting people. It's horrible. About 20 people hurt. Nobody killed. And while people are in critical condition, they are in stable condition. So there's at least that. They're still looking for the guy. He's in a U-Haul. No, actually, he might be in a U-Haul truck with Arizona plates. But apparently, from what I heard on the radio, all U-Haul trucks have Arizona plates because that's where they're based. I'm not sure that's true, but apparently a lot of them do. So if you see a U-Haul truck with Arizona plates, don't necessarily get all Rambo on it. It could be a completely innocent person. But let the authorities know.
They gave out the exact plate number, so don't just go with the plate.
The cops? It's probably some...
The city?
We don't have it.
Whomever is looking for this vehicle, I'm not necessarily. Uh-huh. It wasn't me who put out the statement about it, but yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Well, if he drives into the radio studio, then we'll take note, but yeah,
we're
not
looking
for it.
One part of the detail... Yeah, it's that license plate and number... But the details are still coming out. It's so fresh. It seemed like all mayhem and chaos had occurred.
I'm not sure how they figured out that he belonged to the U-Haul truck, because apparently, first of all, the surveillance cameras in the subway station weren't working.
Yeah, I was asking you about that.
Maybe he knew that. Maybe he knew that, or maybe that's just, you know, MTA for you. But okay, so you don't have that. I think there's a picture of him going around. I'm pretty sure there is. But again, how do you link that to the U-Haul truck unless somebody saw him get into a U-Haul truck?
You go to the next camera out,
uh-huh,
and then you follow how that shot, how they got to that position, and you work your way out until you get to whatever vehicle they came out.
Except the subway station cameras aren't working, so you can't rely on those. But
but the nearest entrance or the
who operates the camera? Yes, it would be the subway station. But
or you scan all the other cameras for where that person may have gotten on the train.
You have to go to local businesses who have cameras and ask them, hey, did you see anything? I think that's the best way to do it. That way it's not this big Orwellian state looking at everybody. It's a whole bunch of people looking at who's going by their store in their house. And then you pull that and people contribute information.
Well, there's already a tip lines, and they're asking for help. They're asking for any photos, any kind of media you might have that could help, even if you're not sure. And somebody's got to organize it and investigate. That mm-hmm. is literally their job when something like this happens to so many people on a public transit system. I know there's a MTA police department. There's all kinds of people looking into it.
I was watching the press conference earlier today, and I was struck by something. When everybody was speaking, you had, well, first of all, the mayor has COVID, so he can't be around for the fun. He has to broadcast remotely. But everybody else who was there on the scene, the deputy mayor, someone from the NYPD, someone from the fire department, they were all women. I thought that was amazing. Something like four people in a row. And you know, when's the last time you saw something like that? And I think that's, you know, and of course the governor, also a woman. So it's you know, we're making progress. You know, it's so slow. It's so halting, but we're getting there slowly.
I feel like you've seen it in other parts of the country more so in little moments here and there. And then, yeah, to have such a big place, have so many leaders letting us know and keeping us aware of what's going on, that's pretty spectacular.
We have a new member of the Supreme Court, also a woman, an African-American woman. Never happened before.
Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Ain't that amazing?
Soon to be justice.
Yeah. And soon maybe there'll be justice. You know, even though Democrats don't gain a damn thing from this because she's just replacing another Democratic-appointed judge, I like to think that inside the halls of the Supreme Court, they influence each other And I hope that her voice might well be listened to and maybe might sway people. I know it's naive to think this, but, you know, we have to hold on to whatever hope we have. And, you know, I don't know if people realize this. Everyone seems to be saying that this November, Democrats are going to lose. You know, what's the point of even having an election if you already have concluded what the outcome is going to be? You know, I think this negativity is really harmful, and I think it's going to encourage people not to vote. And when you do that, it's, you know, it's a foregone conclusion. You get the result that you predict because you tell people the result in advance. That is the biggest mistake that we can make. Now, I just, you know, there's so many, we could spend the entire hour listing off all the bad things that will happen if Republicans gain control. But as long as we're talking about the Supreme Court, if Republicans are, dominate the Senate, there is not a single candidate that Biden can introduce to the Supreme Court that will even come to the floor for a vote. Imagine that. Even if Biden gets reelected in 2024 and Republicans hold on to the Senate, which I can't imagine how they can do this, but in this country, anything's possible. For the remaining 6 years, they are stubborn enough and pigheaded enough to simply squash any appointment that he makes. So it doesn't matter if you know, four Supreme Court justices resign. They won't allow a single one to get through. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you have a Democratic president. He'll have no power. So, you know, before we conclude that the Democrats are going to lose big in November, maybe we should think about what does that mean? And I'm speaking primarily to people who would vote for the Democrats, because Republicans obviously are not going to vote for them. Yeah, that we get that. But a lot of Democrats are like, yeah, you know what? My life hasn't improved. You know, this things aren't that great. What's the difference between Biden and somebody else? It's not worth it. Well, it is worth it, because if you lose what little power you have right now, and yeah, it's very little power, 50-50 Senate and the likes of Joe Manchin supposedly on your side, it could get worse than that. And if it gets worse than that, well, you wouldn't have a Justice Jackson, for one thing. Probably we're going to lose Roe versus Wade this year. Yeah, imagine that. Brought to you by Republicans. Okay? If more Democrats had been elected, that wouldn't have happened. It does matter. You know, you might be able to point to things that are similar, you know, some of Biden's policies, some of the things he's done in the past. Okay, fine. But there are differences, and those differences are staggering, and they make a difference for a very, very long time. So to ignore that is extremely foolish. Now, if you're a Republican, obviously, you know, that you're going to vote for what you want to vote for. But to Democrats, you need to remember that your vote matters. It counts. It makes a difference. It's not all the same. And if you sit this one out, if you don't think it matters, it's a vote for the opposition. There's no two ways about that. And I don't care who you want to blame. If you want to blame the Democratic Party or the leadership for not inspiring you enough, it was your decision in the end not to vote. And by doing that, you ensured the other side won. Take responsibility. All right? Yeah, the leadership is responsible as well for being inept and not doing as much as they could do. But in the end, it's in your hands. It's in your hands. So I don't want to hear all the complaining, even though I'm going to be the one complaining in the years ahead if this goes badly. Because that's what we voted for. That's what we keep voting for. And there's a whole laundry list of things that are happening, you know, and things that are bad, things that will last for a very, very long time that came about as a result of certain people being put in power, where they could abuse the system because they know how to play the game.
I know you're keeping it real. Well, sort of trying to be encouraging, but the problem is that it's still using fear. I know fear has been successful, but I think to your original first point, we need to harness the accomplishments and the good things that can occur and that have happened that can then that can be part of a new platform, a platform that is perhaps speaks more broadly, isn't to one extreme or the other, something that can actually translate to the kind of unity that's being that's in the sort of positive rhetoric on the Democratic side. But I find that, you know, you're decrying people saying, oh, what's the point and what's this and that? And then all of your evidence is feared based, like why losing could be this catastrophe or that catastrophe, and why you shouldn't, why you're not going to be surprised when it happens. Well, thanks for that. That is not very positive. I think the positive stories, I mean, we can have that. I think you're right. We should not let go or forget that. And it did work. Being afraid of the alternative got us at least to a more stable, I think, in my opinion,
right.
How dare me, administration and more or less functional government.
Fear of Trump.
But it is not necessarily the only winning strategy going forward. And I think we need to have what you're saying, of course, on the back burner, kind of in the back of our minds, and a clear kind of subtext of this plot. But the primary way to get people excited about voting and being at least engaged. I don't care what side you vote on. Like, let's just do it. Try to stay away from the culture war idiocy and really provide something that people can get behind and get excited about.
Okay, I'll take you up on that, because this is something that Democrats are profoundly bad at, and that's taking credit for things that they accomplish. And I think one of the reasons they're so reluctant to do that is because they're afraid of being challenged. And everything that they point to that is an accomplishment, Republicans will join on them and say, jump on them and say, no, it's not, that's not positive, or you didn't do that, or it's basically make up things. They will make up facts. Kyle, can you point to something that the Democrats should take credit for? One of these more positive things that that you think we should be focusing on?
I don't know. I mean, that's part of the whole list of reasons and things you were saying we could get into if we were going to go off on it. But I would say, like, infrastructure package wasn't a total flop.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. I mean, that's not my platform.
Republicans are taking credit for that. We've seen this ourselves. Republicans like Lee Zeldin are taking credit for the infrastructure bill that they voted against, because improvements are happening in their communities. And even though they voted against it, they're saying, I'm in Congress, and this came from Congress, therefore it's because of me. This is the level they stoop to. You know, the facts mean absolutely nothing. Now, Republicans, on the other hand, will come up with false narratives. They'll say things like critical race theory is being taught to kindergartners, and get parents all up in arms about that, so that they turn out en masse voting against the Democrats who had absolutely nothing to do with that. Here's another example. You remember when Trump was in power, the riots, the cities burning, you know, because of police killings of African Americans. Now, Republicans have successfully turned that around and somehow blame Democrats for it. Trump was in power at the time. Do you think if Biden was in power at the time, Republicans would be saying, look what happened under Biden's administration? Cities were burning. You know, people were saying nasty things to the cops. Well, how come Democrats don't say, this is what happened under Trump? This is what the streets look like. This is a civil unrest that he encouraged through his actions and inactions. They don't say things like that. If they did, that might drive the narrative more in their direction. Instead, they just take it. And Republicans literally make things up. Let's, you know, listen to what Lee Zeldin says. He's a perfect example because he's a Trump mouthpiece right here locally. He will just say things, blame Democrats for everything. And that sound that you're hearing is something being shelled in Ukraine, because we have the audio up on some surveillance cameras over there, which is disturbing. We can't forget what's going on over there. But, you know, it reminds me of foreign policy as well. Now, you know, it's really hard to debate who is more competent at foreign policy, you know, Trump or Biden. But Democrats don't seem to really want to take credit for that. I don't know if they're afraid of offending Republicans or what, but they just need to be playing the game more, because Republicans are good at that, and the rules apparently don't matter.
I just disagree. I don't think that them successfully turning street violence during what were otherwise, you know, a massive, like, larger and wider than we've ever seen protests in this country. I don't think that's successfully been turned into anything. I mean, it was what was going on. I don't think driving that narrative.
Hang on.
I don't think twisting it into not being into some different kind of lie, or a lie that you want.
It's not
to
a
defend.
Lie. This is the whole problem. Look, what they are saying is Black Lives Matter protesters and anarchists in Portland all are putting fear into the hearts of law-abiding citizens. Now, you hear a sentence like that, who do you think is going to be blamed for that, Republicans or Democrats? I'm saying blame Republicans for that, not Democrats. Why do Democrats shoulder the blame for something that happened under the Republican administration? That is all I am saying. And I don't think it's a lie. I think that is what happened. I think people were reacting basically the administration not pursuing charges, not listening to the people who were going through all the hell in these various places. And the result was civil unrest. You can't blame that on the Democrats, who weren't even in power at the time.
Yeah, I'm saying lies just beget more lies, and that's their apt to do. That's their prerogative. I don't think lying or mischaracterizing or obfuscating what happened. I'm saying broadly, not any specific instance.
You think blaming Trump is a lie for that?
No, I think that trying to blame the previous administration for people's actions in the street are I don't think like. Specifically, I mean, that is a real tangential leap in okay. logic. Like, yeah, they're out protesting, but it wasn't that president that made them go do that. That's like somebody blaming Biden now for them going crazy.
But they're doing that. They're blaming Biden for what happened while Trump was in power.
I think it's a weak defense.
Okay, but what
it's weak.
Okay, but basically what you're doing is you're taking the high road. And
they're still lying.
I'm saying that's a mistake to always take the high road, because most people don't get
it. There's other things to talk about.
All right, bring it up then. Bring up something else to talk about. I've got something for you.
Let's talk about the police in Albany that like shoved that protester. Buffalo.
Yeah.
That was settled this week. I think the cops are still working there or something.
Yeah. And they were found. We talked about this. I think 80-year-old guy was just on camera shoved to the ground, his bleeding from the head. Another cop prevented an officer from helping him. And they were found to have done nothing wrong. And this is on camera. Imagine all the times when things weren't on camera. Look, all I'm saying is that Republicans are very successful at somehow shifting the blame for these things to Democrats. And Democrats don't do anything in response. And the narrative changes so that Democrats are the ones being blamed for things that they had no control over. All right. So all I'm saying is, you know, you counter that by saying you're more responsible than we are. And whether or not that is approvable, at least you're fighting back. I don't think Democrats are fighting back nearly enough, whether it's taking credit for things that they did or not taking the blame for things they didn't do. But here's something that is awfully hard to step away from. What's going on in Alabama right now? There's a new law in Alabama as of yesterday that criminalizes gender-affirming health care for transgender youth. And get this, a threat of 10 years in prison for medical providers. It passed 66-28 from the state's House of Representatives and was signed into law by their Governor Meemaw, whatever her name is. The ACLU called it the first bill of its kind to make health care for transgender youth a felony, and they are challenging it in court. Basically, the Republicans have declared war on transgender youth, on the gay community, on African Americans, on so many people. And somehow that's not the leading headlines. It should be. Now, get this. This law makes it a felony, punishable with up to 10 years in prison, to provide medical care, including hormone treatment, puberty blockers and gender reassignment surgery to minors. First of all, gender reassignment surgery for minors is incredibly rare. I think single digits. But hormone treatment has been known to save lives. And, you know, we're talking about maybe half of all transgender kids consider suicide at one point. Why are Republicans declaring war on these kids? That is, there's just no excuse for that. But it shows you the hatred, the fear that that is at the heart of their way of thinking. You know, the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida is now being replicated all over the place. You know, I keep hearing the defense for that. Well, it doesn't even say gay in the law anywhere. But you know what? It has that very specific effect. You don't have to say gay in order to affect gay people. Other states, they're making it even more strict and severe, where you can't even talk about this kind of thing up through 12th grade. So it's not just kids anymore. It's teenagers. And, you know, I saw DeSantis, governor of Florida, signing that into law, the Don't Say Gay bill, basically saying right there in front of a crowd how it's inappropriate for children to be exposed to this kind of thing. And he signed the bill in front of a bunch of children. What the hell? I mean, the hypocrisy here is just insane. And they keep getting away with it. So, yeah, if you don't vote, this is what you get more of. And you are voting for more of it. Roe versus Wade, anti-gay, anti-trans, anti-African-American. Do you think they're going to stop? I don't think they're going to stop.
The thing about that bill in Florida is that, you know, that word is going to be used on the playground. All the kids that, you know, don't feel like they have a place there and have and are a normal part of their peer groups, mm-hmm. they're going to be called gay. They're going to be treated differently, and all kinds of other words are probably going to be used, and they'll have less resources as a result.
Yeah, you can't go to your teacher and say, I don't understand what this is all about, because then they'd have to talk about what gay people actually are. You know, I keep thinking of that film we saw a few weeks ago about the kid growing up in Miami, where he asked the older guy, what's a faggot?
Moonlight.
Yeah. You know, the guy says that's a word that people use against gay people to make them feel bad. A teacher wouldn't be able to say that. A teacher in Florida would not be able to say something like that to a kid of that age when the kid wants to know. And we're seeing things like that being reflected all over the country. Why? Wait, what is the crisis here? This is what Republicans are so good at. They are good at creating crises where there are none. The crisis at the border. Have you heard about the crisis at the border? Oh my God, they're going nuts. The crisis at the border is basically Biden saying Article 42. We're done with that. That was the pandemic clause that basically Trump signed that into law, saying that you couldn't apply for citizenship because of the threat of pandemic of COVID-19 for refugees.
It's turned into this open borders argument, and there's no such thing.
It's not that. All he did was basically revert back to what it was before the pandemic. And the Republicans have turned this into, now the gates are open.
They said just say open borders.
Okay, but you know what? These were the borders under Trump. This is what it was like then. So we're going back to that, and you're saying it's open borders. Completely distorting what is actually happening, but people are buying it. And saying, oh, yeah, so Biden is basically for mandatory sex change, forcing people to use every bathroom possible, all right, and burning down buildings.
Letting Russians in through Mexico.
Letting Russians and Ukrainians and who knows who else through borders and, you know, a critical race theory, everything you can possibly imagine just to get people panicked and voting. But it's all fake. It's all nonsense. You don't hear much about critical race theory right now. You notice it's kind of in a lull because there's no election right around the corner. So they're basically making up new stories that they can peddle once November comes around.
but it does untold damage to the communities that are being targeted, that are being cast out as these boogeymen, being implicated and letting other people sort of their imaginations and their theories and nosiness, mm-hmm. just abject nosiness in society, just like being in people's business and not respecting, you know, what they might be going through, how their circumstance might be affected. It's silly. And I'm just sort of, I find it's really shameless and something that will disrupt and be really harmful. It makes people who are queer and people who are different, it makes their very existence taboo.
Mm-hmm.
It makes young people who are learning about this stuff, it makes them have more unhealthy attitudes. If these issues don't affect them, they have unhealthy attitudes towards people who are not like them. And it's this just constant fear of lifestyles and those that are not homogenous and just like you in thinking and in religion and in attitudes towards inanimate objects, whatever it is. There's this intolerance for outside thinking, and that isn't the deliberative body that our country is supposed to represent, and it's not in good faith.
Yeah, it's not like everybody out there is confident enough to stand up on a soapbox and demand their rights. A lot of people there who are still figuring it out, who are insecure, who are bullied, don't have the happiest home life. These are the true victims here. And, you know, I would say, you know, to everybody who votes for ignorant, hateful bills like this that turn into laws, you should spend time with those people, you know, with trans kids to learn about what they go through. Except what a horrible thing to do to trans kids to subject them to that. But these people are so ignorant when they pass these laws. They don't know the first thing about the people they are affecting.
They're so quick to go running to the border for photo ops. They should really get to know the people their legislation and policies are going to abuse.
All right. You're listening to WUSB. It's Off the Wall. We're in the middle of Radiothon, which is our semi-annual fundraiser. And if you want to support WUSB, please either give a call to 631-632-6901 and pledge your support that way. Get a t-shirt, coffee mug, sweatshirt, all kinds of cool things that we have.
I hear there's a fresh design for this year.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Or you can go to WUSB.FM, our website, and you can pledge there as well. It's really simple, easy, and it makes a huge difference in keeping alternative voices on the air and saying various things.
Do you know that we do this because we love doing this?
Yeah, that's right. We don't get a dime or a penny. We don't get a penny.
We were just discussing this. There's big, you know, big biz, big top dollar programs, you know, all the glitzy stuff, all the big commercial, you know, they have teams of people and all kinds of researchers and people that fix their hair. I fix my own hair.
Yeah, you do. And I should say you do a better job.
Isn't it?
Good. Yeah, we're not going to say what show it is. We saw one of those, you know, late night entertainment shows that only goes for about a half hour, is only on once a week. And the person there was basically reading from a script the whole time, didn't even have an audience, and had a musical guest for the last half of the show. And we're unscripted. We don't get paid, and we don't have a musical guest. You know, it's
no advertisers.
And we do our own hair.
We're fundraising now to support other programs as well as ours.
That's right.
That's what makes this work. There are all kinds of people. There are magical remote engineers that are applying their skills to every aspect of this operation. Mm-hmm. There are high stakes negotiations going on in the operations and managerial department. We have
I don't know about those.
We have a brimming volunteer cadre.
Mm-hmm.
folks that are just I mean, their elbows are getting worn just moving piles of pledge forms.
From toddlers to senior citizens.
It's a huge community effort here. We bring subject matter and music, ideas, all of that to you, and, you know, more.
And here's the best part. You might be listening to us on tape delay. You might be listening to us next week. You might be listening to us from some remote community in Asia, where we broadcast all throughout the internet on WUSB.FM and on 2600.com/off the wall. You can still pledge. You can still make your voice heard. You can still strengthen WUSB and keep us going so that we're here for the years ahead. All you have to do is go to WUSB.FM and fill out the form there, or give a call to 631-632-6901. If nobody picks up because they're probably too busy, you can always leave a message, be called back, and every pledge counts. This is how we've stayed on the air for decades now. You know, if you pledge, say, $90.1, because 90.1 is our frequency, or $107.3, because that's our other frequency, that added up with a bunch more people doing the same thing, all of a sudden, you got some significant money there to pay off the bills and get equipment that works and various things like that. So it matters. It really does. And if you've heard anything on WUSB that makes you think, then really consider doing it. You can also contact other people and tell them about the magic of WUSB and encourage them to pledge as well. You can check with your employer to see if they have a matching fund. There's all sorts of ways to make this bigger.
Yeah, you could tell the FCC. You can say, you know what? This is the best station on Long Island.
They don't care about that. They don't care.
No.
FCC doesn't
care.
They
don't care.
If the FCC cared about quality, you think there'd be a station... Well, I'm not going to name names, but let's look at the rest of the FM dial. You'll see that the FCC does not care about quality.
It was worth a shot. But you can...
And that's fine. They should stay out of the radio business, I think.
Tell your neighborhood grocer that...
You should.
You enjoy radio and that, you know what? They could play your radio station.
Is your neighborhood grocer playing WUSB?
They could have piped in stuff. You know, they could have all kinds of contracts and releases.
It's awful.
It's terrible. Yeah. They're bound. They're in this just obligation that they cannot, this servitude to a machine somewhere. But somebody could put on a clock radio, and they could dial it to 90.1.
Yeah,
and we would. Be there. We would be there for your checkout line.
Are there still clock radios?
I don't know.
Do people use clocks anymore? Wait, why would people stop using clocks? Huh. But they're not using as clocks like they used to. I don't understand that. Huh. Everything that I do, whether it's newspapers or radio or clocks, people tell me, oh yeah, it's dying. It's not going to be around anymore. I don't think that's true.
Oh, we're getting warmed up.
Vinyl records. 8-track, well, okay, maybe 8-track, okay, well, but you know, all sorts of things.
Well, I'll just put this out there. It's getting nice out. There's going to be a lot
of
concerts.
Whoa. Winter's not nice?
No, I mean, it's getting sunnier out and less weathery.
Yeah, I don't like that.
All right, yeah, that's you. But I'm just saying, for the benefit of our audience, the listening audience, look, there's events coming up. There's all kinds of activity going on. This radio station will cover it.
That's
guarantee
right.
You.
That's right.
I am saying it. I'm saying it here. You can quote me. It's true. We will cover music. We'll cover events. We'll be out there in the community sharing about all kinds of events like, I don't know, farmer's markets. I'm sure we're going to go to a farmer's market.
Let me quote you on something right now because, yeah, we are covering things. And in fact, tonight, because we're filling in for Finn, who comes in at 7 o'clock until 9, tonight what we're doing is we're airing a special program all about something that's going on in our neighborhood. I'm talking about the local Gyrodyne facility, which is right next door to Stone River Campus, where there is a huge debate going on in the entire community about the plans to subdivide that and build a nursing facility and a hotel and all sorts of things that will basically destroy the open space that's there right now. So tune in at 7 o'clock. We're going to have a broadcast of a hearing. We're going to have some interviews after that. It's going to be really interesting and enlightening. And even if you're nowhere near that area, it's relevant because guaranteed there's something like that going on near you. And it's a great way to learn about how the process works, what the dangers are. That's coming up at 7 o'clock. But right now, yes, we all know what that means. It means we're almost finished with this because we're up to the year, what year, 2020? Basically, films of the year that was, where we basically go out and see an Academy Award winning Best Picture for every year the Academy Awards existed. We started in 1929, and wow, we're up to 2020. And this is the domestic film that won in 2020. And what is it titled, Kyle?
The title of this film is Nomadland.
Nomadland.
And it was directed, written, produced, edited, and written by Chloe Zhao, based on a nonfiction book called Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century.
You know, we started watching this. I had no idea what this film was about. I had no clue. So
I had a kind of an idea.
I was very surprised. Well, okay, sum it up for us.
Well, it's brilliant. I lived in a neighborhood that had a lot of people living in vehicles, and housing and the sort of dichotomy among classes, and the availability and real estate and leasing and renting. It's a crazy reality of adulthood. And this is about an entire community that lives on wheels. They're nomads. They move around. They go from RV parks. They don't stay places long, but they stay a community. They stay tight-knit. And it's very fascinating. There's the production, and there's also the community and the story. The main character is an actress. Most all of the other characters are real people. That is fascinating, and that's part of the production, I think. And so you could talk about both. I don't know where you want to start.
Well, she played the cop on Fargo.
Yes.
In the film. And yes. She's married to Joe Cohen, who made that film.
Francis McDormand.
And there's a guy in there, too. I'm bad with names, but the tall, gray-haired guy.
Spears?
Is that his name? No, that's not his name. It's something else. Richard something, I think. He played a commander on the science fiction show The Expanse, and he was basically very different character. So those are like
a
two
New
actors.
Zealand accent.
Something that. Like that, yeah. As there's more shelling in Ukraine that we hear live on our speakers, that's very disturbing. But let's try and get back to our escapist fair here. This was, I would say, the most real film that we've seen so far, because it played like a documentary, and in many ways it was, because just about everybody in the film was an extra who used their real... Thank you. Their real first name, and basically was playing a part that they played in real life. I think it told the story very well. I know a number of people are upset with this film because it doesn't touch upon those people who are in poverty, who have no choice but to live in a trailer or in a car or something like that. And I get that, but this is not their film. This is not the film about their story. This is a film about the people who basically choose to travel around the country, have events, have friends that they see on an annual basis, or basically who just live this nomadic lifestyle, people that, you know, we recognize. I recognized a lot of these characters.
Yeah, I think that's a totally unfair critique. To say one or the other community is more or less valid, it's so stupid. What about the people that can't afford a tent and how impoverished they are? Yeah, and what about the people that can't afford what those people can't afford? You can go down this fractal of a pity loophole.
It's whataboutism.
A fracture in logic. But this is what we're talking about. Yeah. These people's story, and they're real people. So to even deny that, if it was completely fiction and it was focused on one community, you could say, you know, you could have focused on another community. Well, this is an actual community that exists, and they participated in the project.
Yes.
So get real.
All right. Yeah, sit down now.
No, but I love that technique, but I feel it's difficult. Even if these real people that are performing and, you know, they're on camera, how you navigate that in a production, I can't even imagine, like, the difficulty, the challenge, the getting close to people, but not how you present the thing you're working on. I find this very difficult going from, like, news gathering to, like, filmmaking to... You know, what are you doing, you know, when you're out there interviewing people, when the...
Oh boy, that's not good.
When they're giving you access to their lives, you know, are you going to sensationalize aspects of it? Are you going to minimize parts of it? Is that doing, are you doing it true? Are you portraying yourself as someone who's doing a documentary and then making a story that's not really, so to do that, and I've seen this in get practice and become something that people can navigate in the reality genre on television, as well as a lot of really skilled documentary work out there. So I know there are techniques of handling it, but I love the challenge, and I think that this was executed really well in that regard. And I don't know what those conversations were like, but I imagine you really want to be upfront and say, well, this is a movie, but we are we want to just integrate and share in your story telling it this way.
I feel so horrible right now talking about film while we're literally hearing a city being bombed. It's precious little we can do.
That's not true. That's not true. We're doing a lot. Everyone is
It's all we can do, but it's not enough. And concerning these people in the film, like I said, I recognize them. And what's interesting about it, and I read about this, is that there was a very deliberate attempt made to not politicize anything, because what we're talking about is strong Trump country, all the places that we journey to. And maybe a bunch of the people in the film were also strong pro-Trumpers. But that doesn't have to define who you are. And I thought these people were beautiful for who they were. And this is the part of America that I have always found attractive. It's people that, you know, live on the road and just do all these things that are tied to nature, and have this bond that is impossible to break, and this strength that is really inspirational. And I think, you know, once you allow yourself to be defined by a particular political ideology, or God forbid, a particular person, then you lose that magic. You lose that appeal. And when we can not see that, you know, just erase that, you get to see the person. You get to see the actual person. And that is what's really important. That's what I got from this film. I didn't even think about what their politics might be, because it didn't matter. Of course, it does matter in the end if people are pushing something that is horrible and leads to bad things. But for this film, what we saw people who are just basically trying to live their lives without interference and dealing with challenges, from blown out tires to broken engines and various other things like that. And that is something that I think we can all bond on and just feel a common, that's this common thread.
Yeah, I can certainly, I think, reach my own conclusions about the circumstances and sort of what may have been political about their concerns, origins, and so forth, and perhaps what could or could not have been done. Was the sort of root of that. But the stories, the personal convictions, the relationships, that was captured really well. The messiness of it, and the informality. I think that's something around this country that there's quite a bit of, that people can relate. And
who is the guy that people would go on a pilgrimage to see his talks, his lectures about living on the road and
taking Bob care Wells.
Bob Wells. This is a real guy, all right. And people literally go to see him and to gather around and tell stories and things like that. Now the character Fern, I believe was her name, played by Frances
McDormand.
Yeah, the actress in the film, the real actress in the film. She basically is talking to him, talking to Bob Wells, and telling him a story about her husband, about how her husband died after working for this company in a town called Empire, Nevada, which had closed when the company went out of business.
The drywall plant.
Drywall plant, yeah. And basically she told the story about how, you know, she stayed there just to remember him because she felt if she left, nobody would remember him and he wouldn't exist. He told the story about how his son took his own life several years earlier. He is a real person. That was a real story, what he told. You saw the emotion when he told the story. And when they finished shooting that scene, he reached out to her and comforted her, saying, it's going to be okay. You know, your husband will be remembered. He didn't realize she was acting. He didn't realize she wasn't Fern. She was Frances. That is how this film was made. That is what was incredible about it. Obviously, he knows now and was kind of blown away by that. But, basically, the film is filled with things like that. There's one scene, I don't know if you know this, Kyle. There's one scene where Fern has some kind of indigestion inside her trailer, and she has to very quickly sit on the toilet and, basically take care of things.
You mean her bucket?
Her bucket, yeah, okay, fine. Now we have a very clear image. That was real. That was actually happening. And they used that footage. So, yeah. Nomadland, I recommend it. I know a lot of people didn't like it. If you read the reviews on IMDb, oh my God, IMDb reviews are the worst. Well, I'll get into that some other time. Just all the haters show up there. But basically, you know, people want some kind of action adventure. It's not what this film is. And if you're looking for that, you'll be disappointed. But if you're looking to have your mind expanded and to experience something different, which is what I think a film should be, I think you'll find this very entertaining. It was filmed during the pandemic, obviously, but you would never know it because most of it, I guess, was outdoors and people were living their lives regardless.
Yeah, there's so much more to say that my central takeaway is just this imagining of what life is about, what are people's priorities, and the pandemic, of course, in recent years has made people reassess that, and how we're using resources, how we claim space and ownership in this country is, I think, evolving, and attitudes maybe are shifting. People are really concerned. I know a lot of people that, I know there are a lot of people that have kind of varying ideas and resemble parts of the or entire plans, you know, just for whether it's living on the land or travel and so forth. So this is a phenomenon. This is a response in our country in a lot of ways, and I think it's a wonderful storytelling. Although I do think that scene was with him was with Bob Wells is how you would do that and ethically, I would struggle producing that, but very well done.
All right, there goes our projector. We didn't have time for the international film this year for 2020. We'll do that next week, and then it's on to 2021. Oh boy, and then it's over. That's pretty incredible. Well, stay tuned. Coming up at 7 o'clock, we'll be venturing into some town planning board action, where you can hear local townspeople speaking out against something that really concerns them right next door to the Stony Brook campus. It's really fascinating. Please listen to this because this is what makes the decisions that affect our daily lives.
Yeah. Do you want to know the secret sauce? Do you want to know about your local government? Do you want to be involved? Do you want to hear the kinds of plans that people have for the land and the space around you?
And we'll be back right after that to talk to some people about what's going on with this project. Write to us, otw@2600.com, and stay tuned to WUSB, Stony Brook.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine
keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah. Stops turning, ashes where the body's burning. No more war pigs have the power, and as God has struck the hour, day of judgment, God is calling. On the knees, the war pigs crawling. Begging mercies for the sins. Satan laughing spreads his wings. Oh, Lord, yeah.